The Demon That Breaks All Chains.
"By all the dead,"
croaked Ricker as she lifted her head. Her mouth tasted like graves, her empty stomach squelched and bubbled. Felt like there was a mace hanging behind her eyes, bashing painfully against the inside of her skull with every movement. But at least time was going all one way. She'd been sleeping in a nest of furs, but with hard rock underneath, and she dragged a dusty old deerskin around her shoulders, stumbling from the darkness, eyes almost closed against the stabbing light. It wasn't raining, but there was a chilly damp in the air that turned everything dark. No wind, no sound. Everything still as the land of the dead. Tall trees, black wood, and black needles. Jumbles of black rock jutting on the slopes. Tall black mountains in the far-off distance. White-bearded and white-capped like grumpy old warriors. Dark shingles sloped down from the cave mouth to the dark water, and in its mirror, the trees and the rocks and the mountains all reflected, still and perfect and darker than ever. A woman stood there, tattered skirts tucked into her belt up to her thin, pale, veiny calves in the lake. Stood so still she didn't make a ripple. Ricker puffed out her cheeks. When she bent to roll up her trouser legs, her head throbbed so hard she nearly fell. She hitched the bald hide up around her shoulders, then tottered towards the water, crunching shingle, sharp between her bare toes. It was that cold it surely should have frozen. But it's better to do it than live with the fear of it, as her father occasionally told her. So she sloshed out, wincing and shivering, ripples catching the peaceful trees and the still mountains and shattering them into dancing fragments.
"Chilliest winter's ass!"
she gasped as she wobbled up next to the woman. From the side she looked about normal. Old and deep-lined, cool blue eyes fixed on the horizon.
"The cold has a wonderful way of clearing the mind."
Not the witchy croak Ricker had expected. A young voice, smooth and full of music.
"It fixes you on what counts. Draws your attention inwards."
"So you do it to gather your magic or something?"
"I do it because fools rarely follow a woman into cold water with their problems."
She turned, and Ricker could only stare because her face was just the way she'd seen it in her vision. A great pink-grey scar ran down the centre of her buckled forehead, from hairline to mouth. One eye and one brow higher than the other, as though her skull had been entirely split and set back together by a drunken surgeon. There was a crazy zigzag of stitches through the puckered skin. Stitches of golden wire that gleamed in the morning sun.
"I am Cowrib,"
she said in that soft, soft voice.
"Or I was. A sorceress from the utmost north. Or I was. Now I am the Witch of the Forbidden Lake."
She turned back to the horizon.
"I find that suits me better."
Ricker had grown up in the north, where a man with no scars was no man at all, but she never before saw a scar the like of this. She looked down at the water, already settling around her own sharp shin bones and holding a dark reflection of herself.
"What happened to you?"
"An axe happened, as axes do."
"Didn't see it coming, then?"
Cowrib slowly raised one brow. Looked like it took some effort, skin stretching around the stitches.
"I do not need to tell you that the long eye comes when it comes. If you are hoping it will keep you safe from all life's axes, you will be disappointed. But then it is the fate of hope to end in disappointment, as it is the fate of light to end in darkness and life in death. They are still worth something while they last."
Ricker wiggled her numb toes and watched the ripples spread.
"Bit of a bleak message."
If you thought optimism from a hermit whose head is stitched together with golden wire, then you are a bigger fool even than you look, which would be quite an achievement.
Ricker stole a glance sideways, but Carib was looking ahead again.
I thought what I saw in the visions, the golden wire, might be, you know.
I do not know. Try saying the words.
A metaphor?
For what?
I just see the visions. I don't understand them.
The witch gave a hiss of disgust.
It is not the seer's task to understand her visions, girl, any more than it is the potter's task to understand her clay.
I'm guessing.
Ricker winced as she tried to shift her foot on the slippery lake bed and caught her toe on a pointed rock.
We're not actually talking about pots now? Or are we talking about pots now?
The witch gave a hiss of disappointment.
It is the potter's task to impose her will upon the clay, to shape the clay into something useful or something beautiful.
So I have to impose my will upon my visions, shape them into something beautiful?
Ah, a ray of sunshine penetrates the long night of your ignorance.
The witch gave a hiss of scorn. She could do a lot with a hiss.
And I only had to waste half my morning explaining it to you.
But
I am not your mentor, girl, nor your teacher, nor your wise grandmother. You want me to give you the rules, but there are no rules. You are like those old fools, the Magi, who want to chain the world with laws. You are like those old fools, the Eaters, who want to cage the world with prayers. You are like these new fools who want to bind the world with iron and make it obey. The long eye is magic, girl.
She raised her withered arms, screaming it towards the mountains.
It is the devil that cannot be caged. It is the demon that breaks all chains.
She let her arms drop.
If there were rules, it would not be magic.
Guess I'll have to find my own answers then, said Ricker mournfully.
Carib looked down at her feet, hidden in the lake.
Fear is like cold water. A little is a fine thing. It fixes you on what counts. But too much will freeze you. You must make a box inside your mind and put your fear inside and lock it.
That sounds a lot like something a mentor would say.
No doubt I'd be a wonderful one, but I'm not yours.
Ricker heard crunching footsteps behind, turned with a smile, thinking to see Shivers or Isern walking down the shore. Instead, she saw a Shanka coming with a lurching gait, as it had one leg longer than the other, clawed foot sending a shower of shingles sideways with each step. It had fish threaded onto a spear, one still twisting and flipping, scales glinting silvery in the morning sun.
Ah!
Carib smiled, and the great scar through her top lip stretched about the wire in a way Ricker found most unsettling.
Breakfast.
How did you make the Shanka serve you?
Asked Ricker, as it shoved its fish-laden spear point down near the water's edge. Her father always talked of the Flatheads as if they were animals, a plague that couldn't be reasoned with. And here was one snuffling around for sticks to build a fire like any fisherman on the beach. Well, any fisherman with spikes hammered into his head.
The same way you make anyone serve you, said Cowrib, by offering them what they want.
Ricker watched that flat head grunt and slurp to itself, tongue wedged in its great teeth as it carefully stacked twigs on a patch of shingle blackened by years of fires.
They're like people, then.
Oh, no.
And Ricker felt Cowrib's hand on her shoulder, light but firm, and her soft voice in her ear.
They can be trusted. It is them I have to thank for my life.
What, the Shankar?
Yes, if thanks are appropriate for what hardly seems a life.
Ricker watched the flathead fumbling with a flint and tinder and juggling it all over the beach.
Wouldn't think they had the fingers for pretty stitching.
Does this look pretty to you?
Ricker cleared her throat and thought it best to say nothing.
The Shankar don't like baths, and they've no sense of humour at all, but they understand the meeting betwixt flesh and metal. They learned that much from the Master Maker.
And the Shankar bent down, crooked lips pursed, and coaxed a flame into life with its breath.
What happened to the others? Asked Ricker.
The man with the steel eye and the woman with the iron temper. They sat a while beside you, each pretending to be less worried than the other. But after a few days they tired of fish. Neither would trust the other to hunt, so they went off together.
Hold on, said Ricker. Days?
4 days you slept. They are good companions. A woman who is to be taken seriously as a seer should have some colourful folk about her.
I didn't pick them for their colour.
No. They picked you, which speaks to your quality and theirs.
Speaks of good quality or poor?
Carib didn't answer, just turned her bright blue eyes on Ricker and said nothing. Ricker didn't much care for being looked at in that way, especially not by a witch, and especially not one with wire through her face.
Reckon I'll eat, if you don't mind sharing your breakfast.
The Shankar had his fish over the fire now and was making quite the mouth-watering smell. First time Ricker felt hungry in weeks, and she rubbed at her aching belly. Not much to rub these days. Her clothes were hanging off her like rags off a scarecrow.
When my colourful friends get back, we'd best start home, long way down to Ufrith.
Going so soon?
Gave Ricker a worried feeling, the way Carib said it, like there was an unpleasant surprise coming. Pleasant surprises seemed to get rarer as you got older.
I feel better now.
Ricker put her palm a little nervously to her left eye, cool and clammy, just like the other, just like anyone's.
Whatever you did worked.
I have painted runes about your long eye. Runes to keep it caged.
Caged, eh? Grand.
Since she woke, she'd seen no visions of things past and no ghosts of things to come. The world looked more ordinary than any time since the duel, when she'd forced the long eye open. Aside from standing in a magic lake with a woman sent back from the land of the dead while flatheads cooked breakfast, that was. Ricker took a long breath, puffed up her chest and blew it out.
I'm all good.
For now.
Ricker felt her shoulders sag.
It'll get worse again.
The runes will fade, and it will get worse again, then worse still. We must paint the runes so they will not fade. We must tattoo them into your skin with a crowbone needle and chain the long eye for as long as you live.
Ricker stared at her.
I thought it was the demon that breaks all chains.
Yet we must chain it. With 11 wards and 11 wards reversed and 11 times 11, a lock strong enough to hold shut the gates of hell themselves.
That doesn't sound like something you want on your face.
You should eat. Then you should rest. You should drink plenty of water.
What's the water for?
One should always drink plenty of water. The tattooing will take several days. It will be draining for you, and even more so for me.
Ricker brushed her cheek with her fingertips as she watched the smoke from the cook fire drift across the lake. She thought of the hill men and the hill women, and those bastards from past the crinner she'd seen sometimes with their blue-painted faces. She gave one of those sorry sighs, made her lips flap.
There's just no going back from tattoos on your face, is there?
There has never been any going back for you.
Caurib shrugged. Though you could always leave it and let the visions get madder and madder until you are sucked into the darkness and your mind bursts apart into a million screaming fragments. That would save me some work.
Thanks for that option.
Ricker felt a bit teary, had to sniff back hard. But it's better to do it than live with the fear of it and all that.
Reckon I'll go for the tattoos then, if that'll fix it.
The witch gave a hiss of impatience.
Nothing is ever fixed. From the moment it is born, from the moment it is built, everything is always dying, decaying, drifting into chaos.
I could stand a mite less philosophizing and a couple of actual answers in the conversation if it's all the same to you.
Look about you, girl. If I had all the answers, do you think I would be standing in a freezing lake with my head stitched together?
And the witch held up her skirts and sloshed back towards the shore, leaving Ricker scared and shivering up to her calves in the frosty water.
Oh, Caurib had turned back to shout at her, and if you need to shit, make sure you do it well away from the cave.